Today on The Grave Talks, The Dark Side, a conversation with Ryan and Paula Rodriguez. Paranormal research is a shared interest between Ryan and Paula Rodriguez. One so strong that on their first date, they went for a stroll through the nearby cemetery to reflect and to get to know one another. This would spark interest in the supernatural and lead to over a decade of investigation. Instances where they would have to deal directly with demons and the souls of a murderer. On this episode of The Grave Talks, we hear their story.
You know, to be honest with you, I'm not one of those that can share experiences as a child. I never really had one as a child. Just for some reason, I just remember as old as being maybe 4 or 5. It just, all of my interests were more into, believe it or not, like the Scooby-Doo cartoons and Casper the Friendly Ghost. And I know it kind of sounds a little silly, but those kinds of things actually inspired me for some reason. I always wanted to know, is this real? What's the unknown? There's other things that always caught my interest as far as vampires and just the whole entire history of all of that just always captured my attention as a child. Other than that, I wouldn't have an experience that I would be able to share.
Sure. I understand. I didn't have much as a child either, but I was enthralled by unsolved mysteries and I'd watch Scooby-Doo and all those sort of things. Just there was something, comforting about watching ghostly things. I always very much enjoyed it. I really can't say why. Ryan, how about you?
I've had experiences when I was a child. Mm-hmm. It all started, I want to say I was maybe like 4 or 5, maybe 6 in LA. My stepdad at the time, he would kind of have these night terrors and, screaming, saying get her out. And I remember our room was right next to theirs. They actually had to pass through our room to get to theirs. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing a lady actually standing in the doorway. And they always said that it was my stepdad's mom that was there. Another experience was honestly just dogs. We went to a house that my grandpa built, and he was no longer there. There was a new owner, and we introduced ourselves, and I noticed that there's 3 dogs back there, and I commented on that. Mm-hmm. And she says she only had 2. And German Shepherds were kind of a big thing in our family.
Yeah. So you would have known if you saw 3 or 2 dogs.
Yes, absolutely. Because yeah. They had a fence in the back, and that fence, it was an iron gate, but it had mesh over it. Mm-hmm. And you could still see through it.
Sure.
And there's clearly 3 dogs back there, but she only had 2.
Did she recognize, or did it make any sense that someone said, I see 3 dogs? Did that resonate with her at all?
No. She just said, no, I only had 2, which I thought it was weird because actually my mother was with me at that time. And I even mentioned it to her. I said, there's 3 dogs back there.
What did your mom say?
She looked and they weren't there anymore. They ran towards the other side of the house.
Interesting. When you had,
I remember seeing 3 dogs.
Sure, sure. When let's go back to the lady in the doorway a little bit, and your father having night terrors in the house. Give me a kind of the walkthrough of one of your earliest memories of this happening. How did it go?
Man, so me and my brother at that time, we had bunk beds, shared a room.
Yep.
And just in the middle of the night, just randomly, he would just, I'd hear screaming and yelling. And I know that it's not good to wake up someone that has night terrors like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember just kind of opening my eyes and seeing a silhouette of a woman standing in that doorway. And that continued on for, God, a year or so.
Did you see
and the I only saw her once or twice.
Okay. I was going to ask if you saw the woman every time in the doorway. Did he have any, trauma or anything that would be causing the night terrors? If you look at it kind of from a logical perspective of something that happened?
Honestly, not that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. That was back in early 1900s or 1990.
Yeah, 1900s.
Yeah, 1900s. late 1900s.
We're not that damn old yet. 1900s. But you're right. It was the 1900s. It's just scary because you used to say 1900s. We would think back far older than that, but I guess we can say, it was part of the 1900s.
Yeah, late 1900s, early 1990s. How about that?
Okay, sure. So would the night terrors ever be discussed the next day, or did you ever talk to him about, you know, what was he going through? Does he remember them?
No, I mean, I was so young that nothing like that was really discussed, but there was a lot of things that happened in the house, things being moved, and they had a water bed and it would just randomly kind of shake like someone sat on it, you know?
Yeah.
It was just random things like that, things being moved, you know, obviously seeing her shadow. But my mom always talked about that place, and that was in LA.
What was the relationship of him and his mother? Obviously it sounds like she was deceased, but prior to that, was it a fond relationship of mom, or was mom someone that was feared?
No, it was definitely a bond relationship, and it was never anything bad. You know, you didn't feel anything bad. I mean, as a kid, when you hear, you know, your stepdad, a grown man screaming, you know, get her out of here, this and that. And, you know, that kind of scares you a little bit, you know.
Sure.
But there was nothing ever mischievous.
Hey, I was wondering if he's yelling at her to get out of there, or if it was her that came to try and comfort her son while he was going through that.
Yeah, I would go more or less towards comforting, just because, like I said, there was nothing ever malicious or anything like that. It was just random things moved, and, you know, she would just basically make her presence known.
Did you tell your parents that you saw her once while he was having the night terrors?
Yeah, I remember telling my mom that I saw a lady standing there, and she just told me it was probably grandma.
So very nonchalant, not like, oh, you're just seeing things. It was kind of accepted.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think she kind of accepted it too, you know, with everything kind of going on in the house, and, you know, you just kind of get used to it, I guess.
Was your stepdad accepting of the idea of ghosts in the house? Did he have experiences as well?
Yeah. He knew because him and my mom talked, and things happened with him and my mom, you know, things being moved. And he told me that he saw her there at one point.
How interesting.
Because that was actually her house.
Oh, okay. Well, there's another chapter to the story.
Right. So it was actually her house, and we, when she passed away, he got it.
So that makes a little more sense then, that maybe why she was there still checking up on her son. So I'm assuming the idea of ghosts and all that was just kind of part of life then. It really wasn't something that was, you know, really looked on as, oh, we don't talk about that, or that's all bunk, correct?
Correct.
Interesting. So how
did it was definitely open, I guess, about it. You know, they didn't ever tell me not to talk about it or anything like that.
Was there any other momentous moments in that home that you can recall that you wanted to share while you were young living there?
Honestly, not really anything crazy, you know, just objects being moved, and the waterbed thing was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But I guess the main thing for me was just, you know, seeing her shadow standing there during one of his night terrors. And, I mean, when you're 5 or 6 years old, that's kind of scary.
Sure. Yeah, sure. So things progress on in life, obviously. You grow older and probably eventually move out, I'm assuming, unless you got the house next and the fun continues.
So actually a year after that, I think he sold the house.
Okay.
And we moved back to Orange County, because I grew up in Huntington Beach, California.
Okay.
And then we moved there when she passed away, because they were fixing it up to sell it. And then we moved back to Orange County about a year or so after.
So how did your connection back into the paranormal progress as you got older, as you moved out, you kind of moved along with your life? Was it something you were always interested in or questioning? Or,
I mean, after something like that, you know, you always kind of have it in the back of your mind, and, you know, it's just something kind of, I don't know how to explain it. You don't really talk about it much with other people, you know, because everyone thinks you're crazy.
Sure.
But I would say it all came back and really started getting into it more when me and Paula met.
So you guys meet, and how does this begin where you realize this kind of shared interest in the paranormal?
I would say it was probably our first date. Our first date, we walked through the cemetery.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think he thought maybe I was a little crazy. We were trying to figure out where we can go, and I had said, well, yeah, this might sound a little crazy, but you want to go to the cemetery. So he might have thought I was a little weird already from the get-go.
Or it's a sign that you're the one. Because that's not a common thing that someone says. But
yeah, sure, let's go for it.
I get it. Sounds like fun. So how did that go? Was there any experiences in the cemetery that first date, or just a nice, peaceful walk amongst the dead?
Just a nice, peaceful walk, basically. We actually, not too long after that is when we actually started going to certain places in the desert and checking things out. We just started off with the old school tape recorders, and we would go to these abandoned mines, and that's kind of where it all real started. Just catching, you know, voices and things that are little, sounded kind of demonic, you know, and answering questions.
Yeah.
So abandoned mines, that sounds rather creepy. Tell me about this. Where was this? How did that begin? What was the experiences?
You want to take this one?
No, you can.
It's Blythe, California, is where we met. And it's all desert out there. I don't know if you've ever passed through that place. All you pretty much got is just desert and river. So we would just hop in the Ranger and take off. And we came up on this. It's like the old railroad tracks where they used to load gypsum, I think it is. Yeah, for sheetrock, you know?
Sure.
And we just sat up there and press record, and we started asking questions, and we actually didn't listen to it right away. You know, we sat there and kind of did our thing, and we drove the Ranger back down, and we were looking at where we were sitting, and we decided to play it. And what we got there, it was definitely answering our questions. We asked, or I think Paula asked, how old you are. I said 26. And then she asked if they hate when people come here to destroy, because there is like metal sheds out there, you know, old things that have been falling apart. And prior to that, unfortunately, I was out there with the little ones, and we were kind of just throwing rocks, you know, hitting the shed. And after that, when we went there, Paula asked, do you hate when people destroy things? And it said it's him. In a pretty deep voice, and I kind of thought about what I did prior to that.
You were the one throwing the rocks,
yeah. I said it's him, and then it was a little windy that night actually, and we're sitting in the Ranger, and Paula said it's funny how the wind just stopped, and 2-3 seconds after that, in a pure deep voice, evil just said, "Get out."
So.
And when I heard that, because we were staring at where we were just at. And when I heard that, I started the Ranger and I took off. And I was so focused on that voice because of the way it sounded and how deep it was and kind of raspy. I actually almost flipped the Ranger that night. We came up on a wash and I was doing 55-60 trying to get out of there.
You were on a mission to leave.
Yeah, especially after hearing something like that, because it was just us out there. We didn't have anybody else out there, and we're about, I don't know, 15-20 minutes in the desert by ourselves, and it's pitch black everywhere.
It was
a little disturbing.
Yeah, I mean, my question was going to be, how did you react when you captured these EVPs for the first time? And I'm sure kind of going into it, you're hoping you get something, and well, you got something. It may not be exactly what you were expecting or looking for, but you got something.
Yeah, especially with that pretty much being, you know, our first time out there really doing anything like that, you know, going for it and trying to see what we can catch and get some evidence. And, well, we definitely got it. I wasn't expecting anything like that. And it kind of got into my head, man. I'm not going to lie. As soon as I heard that, I started the Ranger and off we were.
It wasn't a normal voice.
When you heard that voice, and you felt, I guess my question is, did you feel anything? Was it just the fear of hearing that deep voice saying, get out? Or was there anything else that kind of led you to get uncomfortable?
I just got chills, man. I mean, we're sitting in the dark. We had all the lights off, just sitting in the dark, kind of staring at this thing with the moonlight. And I don't know. As soon as I heard that, I had chills go right up my body. And I was just like, maybe we shouldn't be here.
Paula,
and
how,
that's pretty much when we left.
Paula, how are you reacting to all this?
You know, it's the same exact, as we're listening to this voice, we just look at each other with our eyes completely is probably as wide as they can be. And I had the same chills. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what to say. I was speechless. He immediately reacted, didn't even say anything. We put it down. He started the razor. And I just remember going fast. And I didn't know what was going through his head at the time, other than he was just trying to get us out of there. Mm-hmm. It was just something I don't think we expected. We were hoping, like you had said, that we would get something. Mm-hmm. And it was great with the first few questions. But I just can't describe that voice. It's definitely not something that you even hear all the time when you're watching all these other shows and all these other investigators with their EVPs. There might be occasionally hearing something that sounds similar to it, but we've never caught a voice like that on our EVP recorder.
Did you save it?
We do have them. Again, like he said, there are old tape cassettes.
Yeah.
So I do believe we have them. They're packed away. Sure. We just recently moved last year. So I know they're packed away safely, but yes, we do have them.
Interesting. So someday you can look back on it, or the kids can look back on it and go, this is the time that mom and dad had a demon that joined us on a road trip. So you get back, you get out of that area and, you know, eventually into a new location. How are you guys reacting once the adrenaline has kind of calmed down?
You know, we're still in shock, you know, just hearing that voice. Like I said, it was the first time we've ever heard anything like that, you know, set aside from the experiences. Just never heard anything like that. And how deep and just evil it sounded, you know.
Did you ever?
Just still in shock. And we talked about it for a while. And I don't think we went back to that spot.
No, for a long time.
Yeah, for a long time, we didn't go back there.
I was just going to ask, did you ever return? But you said for a long time, so that implies you did go back at some point?
Yeah, we passed by it a few times. You know, being in the desert, you know, everyone's going on desert rides and out in their toys. And we've definitely passed by it quite a few times because out there in Blythe, I mean, there's quite a bit out there. You know, there's the old Army base. The Air Force Base that's out there. I think it's Edwards Air Force Base. And I mean, we've sat outside of that thing, and we're literally sitting outside of the gate looking at this place. And all of a sudden we both had this like just dredge feeling of just sadness and anxiety. And we're like, yeah, let's go. And we didn't have any equipment out there. We were just going out just for a ride, you know? Sure. And both of our Apple Watches went off saying high heart rate, and we were like, okay, let's go.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting where it can be backed up by, yeah, you are in fact feeling these things simultaneously. Do you guys consider yourselves to be sensitive in any way, shape, or form to these things more than the average person?
Definitely, Paula. Definitely, Paula. I mean, I get certain feelings when I walk into a place, or, you know, sometimes like the most recent one we did, Brown Canyon. I don't have anxiety. I'm not a fearful person, but that place definitely brought out a whole different side. That was kind of weird. But as far as that, I think Paula's more sensitive than anything.
I would have to agree.
When did you realize that, Paula?
Honestly, I don't really know. I'm very emotional, and if I'm in an area to where I happen to see it, I cry, and sometimes I don't know why. Mm-hmm. So it's I don't know if I'm feeling somebody else's emotions, but I've kind of always been, there's always been something really weird. I've never really understood, like, if I can just meet that one specific person or medium or psychic that might be able to help me answer questions, as a child, I've always been very fearful of water. Even when I would take a normal shower or water would run over my face, I would actually see faces. I don't know why I would envision these faces. I don't know who these faces are or why I would even experience it. But my heart rate would start going up. I wouldn't be able to have the water running in my face very long at all. So that's always very, very weird and strange to me. Ryan's actually helped me overcome that. It took a couple of years and it was a while, but he did let me just understand and know that I was okay. There's nobody here. It's just him. And I've been able to fight that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm connected in any way, shape, or form. Those are answers that I'm still unsure of. But we can go into cemeteries. We went into one just recently, not too long ago. And I didn't know why, but we were driving past a certain area of the cemetery because it was very large. And I looked at him. I said, I don't know why, but I want to cry. And I was already starting to cry. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have any answers on why. And then once we left that area, I was fine. But when we started to walk back, because we had parked the car, we had realized that place where I started to feel that emotion was where all the children were buried.
Okay.
So I just don't know. But yes, I've been the one that's always real sensitive, depending on the location.
Sure. So I have to ask, how did Ryan help you get over the fear of the water and seeing the faces? Was it the regular Thursday night husband wife waterboarding that everyone does while watching reruns of Cheers?
Kind of similar, man. It was just, yeah, you know, push her off the boat into the river.
Yeah, like, hey, I mean, good. Just the usual, you know. Hey, let's try this. Yeah.
Believe it or not, a couple of things. When we would go to the pool, he knew I'd have a hard time, and
yeah,
and he would just tell me, I'm right here, there's nobody else here.
Sure.
And he would help me get under the water and then just come out really, yeah, quick.
Mm-hmm. I'd carry her and tell her, are you ready? And then I would dunk both of us, you know.
Yeah,
she has her arms wrapped around my neck and I'm holding her.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kind of go under together. I'm like, look, you're good, you know.
Yeah. That's an interesting way to do it, and it makes sense. You know, it's kind of, it's exposure therapy to an extent. Why do you think that is, that you had that fear of the water? One, I mean, some may say, well, that maybe that's how you died in a previous life or something of that nature. Some may just say, you know, there's someone that's trying to communicate something through you. What's your opinion on why you had that fear?
Honestly, both. I do believe in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
So I have always thought and wondered, is that something that was related?
Yeah.
But then I've also had, my grandmother always used to tell me, you have a gift, you need to allow to open it up.
Oh.
So I always thought that in my mind is, am I seeing these faces because people are trying to reach out to me? And for some reason, water is the connection to allow me to hear them and see them. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I actually have my opinion on that as well, though.
Yeah.
When she was a baby, I feel personally it could be a traumatic experience, mm-hmm, because when she was a newborn, mm-hmm, her mom actually went into a canal with her car and grabbed Faith and threw her like a football on top of the canal. So I think, or I'm sorry, Paula, Faith's my daughter. Sorry about
okay,
that.
Okay, good. It's not like some random woman like, who's that?
Yeah,
like, the other woman you waterboard at night.
The look that I got, like, what?
This is getting weird.
Yeah, so I feel like it could be a traumatic experience, you know, like even though, you know, she was a newborn.
Yeah.
I mean, that, sure, can have an impact of anything, right?
Yeah, that is true.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it could be either, quite honestly. But yeah, any sort of traumatic experience where one is submerged in water and has no control. Yeah, that would certainly make sense why that fear would develop. But then if you're sensitive on top of that as well, I am interested in that idea too of saying maybe that's the conduit that they're able to communicate with you through that. I mean, it's almost kind of like, you know, you think of running water in a shower, it's white noise. It's almost like static, yeah, on a television or on, right, a radio. Some people don't remember the days of static on a television, but TVs used to do that, kids. And
switching to Channel 3 to play Nintendo.
Exactly. Yes. So, I mean, I could see that almost being kind of a conduit for something kind of coming through. Very,
I mean, even like she said, with just even taking a shower, you know, like she would just kind of hurry up and just be done. And, and she would tell me, she's like, hey, you know, like, I feel like someone's watching me.
Yeah.
And the only person, the other person in there was me on the toilet. And I'm like, hey, there's no one else in here. Trust me.
You had just mentioned that you had an experience at Brown Canyon. Tell me about the history of what Brown Canyon is. I don't know much about it. And then what did you experience there?
So we've looked up Brown Canyon Ranch, and we can't really find much on this place. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was built in the early, I want to say it was 1800s or late 1800s. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't really find much on this place. I know that the brothers that did own it, one of them shot the other brother. Jim shot Richard over cattle, and Jim actually went to prison and then sold off the ranch, and it's gone through numerous hands since. And I think Wildlife or BLM own it right now.
Yes, they do.
But that place, man, I mean, it's beautiful during the day. You go in there and it's cool. The place has no electricity, nothing. Mm-hmm. And we decided, you know, hey, let's come back, because they don't close it off till about 10 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. So we went back, I think it was like 7:38. You know, we just took a REM pod, our recorder, a couple K2s, and I think that was it. Just to kind of go see. And my daughter was with us. She's 10. She goes to certain places with us. There's certain places I won't allow her to go. Mm-hmm. So we went back, and you know, that we were asking questions. The REM pod was going off, and I think you used the pendulum too, right?
I did.
Yeah. So we were getting, you know, pretty good answers, and we felt like we were talking to Richard, and that was the gentleman that was shot. Got some pretty cool stuff there, and once we went to the back of the house, the last room, I was recording it, and it's actually on our video. It's up on YouTube. And when I turned back around, I was talking, we heard a man screaming from outside.
Okay.
And instantly, like, you know, we're like, what was that?
Are you thinking, it's a real person?
It's kind of hard to say, because we live in Sierra Vista, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And this place, you know, it's a mile down the road, but there's really no houses that close to hear it. A scream like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And it didn't sound right.
Uh-uh.
It didn't sound right at all. It sounded like pain, like a pain scream, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, I looked at my daughter, man, and you know, her face kind of was like, what was that? And she had a little bit of tears in her eyes, and she, you know, at that point we just had to leave, because I don't want to put her through anything like that.
Sure.
A week later, we actually had a team from Tucson come down, and their Haunted Encounter Adventures, Pam and Jeff, they came down, and we did it again. We investigated it with them. And the first time was kind of like, you know, I felt really bad anxiety. I felt like I was being watched. And, dude, I had my flashlight in those windows looking outside constantly. Mm-hmm. And it was just a weird feeling, because I'm not that type of person. So the second time we went with that team, Pam and Jeff, you know, we set up, and he had his SLS out, and we caught a stick figure, you know, going up the door into the attic. Mm-hmm. Well, later on during the investigation, all of a sudden we heard stomping on wood, and it was constant, man. It was back and forth, you know, like three or four times. Right. And, his face was like, you know, what was that? And, you know, Paula kind of got scared. It sounded like someone was trying to get in the house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the doors do have locks on it. So I actually I locked the door, and I turned off my camera light, and I got my flashlight, and I was looking outside.
Yeah.
And we did not see anything. We didn't hear anything after that. We went out to the front, and all of that is concrete. Mm-hmm. The back is also concrete, and the metal and the roof on the building itself is metal. So the only thing I could think of was that apparition that we caught on the SLS going up into the attic. The attic's wood. Mm-hmm. And it didn't sound like an animal running or anything. It sounded like stomping.
Like heavy boots.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we know the history that there was a did he kill his brother? Was it a murder or was it just a shoot?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he shot him over cattle.
Okay, so there was a murder on the property. What is there any history of the anything there prior to them owning it, or was it kind of like a family ranch forever?
Yeah, it was just kind of like a family ranch. There, like I said, I mean, I've been on a Google binge trying to figure out, you know, if anything ever happened there. But, you know, with the history in this valley in general, we live in Cochise County. So with the history all of here, I mean, who knows what could have happened, right?
Sure. I mean, yeah. And if you watch like Yellowstone, they kill people all the time and just throw them off a cliff. So it's
take them to the train station.
It's like, oh, it's a cool show about farming and ranching. Oh, wait, no, they killed their ranchers.
Right, right. Like, and I mean, we live 20 minutes away from Tombstone in Arizona.
Sure. So a lot of history there and a lot that could have gone on over the years as people were expanding out that way, making stops here and there. And then I'm assuming, I mean, probably Native American is in that area as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. You had Cochise himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where it might've been someone else. When you look at that experience, I know it was not that long ago, but what do you think? I mean, the easy thing to say is, well, it's the guy who died, but what do you think it was going on there?
I mean, honestly, cause we try to communicate with Richard, because we were there the week prior. Mm-hmm. So we tried to communicate with Richard again, since we felt like that's who was communicating with us before, getting the name, getting answers. And I honestly think it was Jim. I think it was Jim. That was the brother that shot Richard.
Oh, okay.
So Paula was actually taking pictures. And while she was snapping pictures, she went into the kitchen area. And after reviewing, you know, going through the pictures, there's a face looking in from outside. And when we pull up the picture of Jim, there's a really good resemblance there, man. It was kind of eerie, but we put two and two together also. Maybe that's why I was feeling the way I did, because he was watching me from outside. Well, watching us.
So I'm assuming both are dead. He died in prison?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. No, he didn't die in prison. He was released. When did he?
I think he only served 5 years, believe it or not.
5 years. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because it was reasonable. Like early 1920s.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That far back. Okay. I thought it was a lot more recent than that. Yeah, 5 years for murdering over a cow. Well, that sounds about right.
Right. Back then, yeah.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Ryan and Paula. In part two, in Brown Canyon, did a demon make himself known to Ryan and Paula? What is their goal while investigating a private residence? And when they arrived to the murder-suicide site, what kind of interactions did they have with the spirits? And has Ryan and Paula ever been deceived by an entity pretending to be someone that they weren't? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.